Wolves are back in much of the West, with packs now established even in California. The return of wolves after they were wiped out by hunting thrills conservationists. Ranchers are less excited because they now have to take greater measures to protect their livestock from predators, which leads to events like permitted shooting of wolves in several states. The National Wildlife Research Center in the Department of Agriculture looks for non-lethal ways to keep wolves at bay. We had a guest on talking to us about this a couple of months ago, Dr. Julie Young. The efforts that she is undertaking, along with several other researchers, include an experiment to bring in dog breeds to protect cattle and sheep herds. Danny Kinka is a PhD student at Utah State University and was involved with this study, and he's our guest on The Exchange. Hi, Danny.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. Thanks for joining us. So Julie Young was our guest a few months ago. We gathered from her that there are lots of non-lethal methods for keeping wolves away from livestock currently under study.
Yeah, that's correct. My focus of my PhD was just livestock guardian dogs, but they're just one of a number of technologies.
So did you initiate the work on this guardian dog study?
Yeah, Julie was my boss, my graduate advisor for my PhD. So mm-hmm. I was doing a lot of the on-the-ground research with the dogs. She handled a lot more of the big stuff, the importing of the dogs and whatnot, and I was spending more time out in the field measuring their behavior and everything else.
So the study actually took, what, 4 years altogether?
We did 4 years of field work and then, yeah, about another year or so of finishing up the dissertation. We're still doing some of the edits on the work there, but it's coming out now, so 4 years of field work.
All right, so tell us what you set out to do, how you originally set things up.
Yeah, so we wanted to, the question was, could we find a kind of a better breed of livestock guardian dog, a more effective dog, particularly for dealing with large carnivores, wolves and grizzly bears. We had been using livestock guardian dogs in the United States since the late 70s, early 80s, and we knew that ranchers were really enjoying, were getting a lot of utility out of the dogs that they had, particularly dealing with coyotes, which are the primary depredators of livestock, sheep in this case. What they were saying was they were a bit concerned that the dogs that they were using might be less successful at dealing with these larger, more formidable carnivores like wolves and grizzly bears, and so asked us, the USDA, that is, if we could find a breed of guard dog in Old World Europe that was more suited for dealing with these large carnivores. So that's exactly what we did. We went through a process of identifying, of the 33 or so recognized guard dog breeds in the world, which were the ones that had co-evolved, so to speak, with large carnivores in their countries of origin and had always dealt with them. This is wolves and brown bears being a synonymous term for grizzly bears used more commonly in Europe. Which were also non-aggressive towards humans. And from that list, we identified three that we thought would have potential. We imported them here as puppies, placed them with livestock producers or sheep producers throughout the West, Washington, Oregon, Idaho, Montana, and Wyoming. And then for the next 4 years, we monitored their success at deterring predators, behavioral differences, effects on carnivore populations, and then perceived effectiveness.
So a really interesting term that you kind of flew by there, co-evolved, the idea being that these particular breeds of dogs have been used to having large predators around, unlike perhaps the ones that have been used in the West previously here.
Right, and the reason I flew by it was I kind of immediately regretted my word choice there. co-evolved is probably not the right term here, but certainly these are dogs that would have been selectively bred to deal particularly with those carnivores because they've been used for thousands of years in Europe. So thousands of years of dog breeding, dog generations not that long, that's a lot of selective breeding and potentially sculpting of a breed of dog that's ideally suited for dealing with that carnivore. So yeah, a kind of evolution, but co-evolution is probably not the right term to be bandying about there.
All right, but it made sense, though, that this breed has been used to having other animals around to deal with. But I do wonder how narrow a slot that is, though, finding a dog that will take on a big, scary creature and yet also be a sweet pet to have around kids and other pets.
These dogs could potentially make pets and do occasionally in some circumstances if they're not working out or they're injured, that kind of thing. But primarily, a good working livestock guardian dog is not also going to serve as a family pet. I mean, they'll be gentle around people that they're familiar with. They can act very aggressively towards people that they're not familiar with. When we say non-violent, I mean, they're not actually physically biting people. Mm-hmm. They'll still come up and bark at you. They don't look very fluffy and friendly out there on the landscape. But there are places in Europe where livestock theft is and has historically been a bigger problem. So the guard dog breeds are actually selected towards protecting livestock from theft as well, and therefore can be physically aggressive towards people, and that just does not work in a United States shared public lands model. So we wanted dogs that wouldn't do that, but to say that they're kind of fluffy, cuddly, friendly family pets is, if they're bonded to livestock at a young age and set up to be guardian animals, trained, so to speak, to be guardian animals, they don't really look all that similar to the dog that you might have sleeping at your feet right now.
All right. So that's a great concept, too, though, to take in, the idea of being bonded to the herd. So that this is really necessary, it sounds like, for the dogs. They have to feel some sense of family with the creatures they're guarding?
Sure. I don't know what's going on in the dog's head. I don't know if it's family or a pack mentality thing or if it's just something they don't really think about, so to speak. But just the same way, it's interesting. So people ask, do we train them to guard? And the answer is no, we don't train them specifically to guard, as in chasing coyotes over hillsides. But what you do have to do, and what's very important, is the dogs at a very young age need to be bonded with whatever they're intended to protect. So most people's familiarity with dogs is raising them as pet themselves, and so the dog bonds to you or your family or whoever's living in the house and kind of probably identifies with those people as part of a pack. Well, in the same way that works, dogs are really, really good at bonding across species lines. So we can put puppies with young lambs and their mother, and that dog, if handled properly, will grow up to be bonded with those sheep. And probably what's happening is they're identifying the sheep as pack members or something. Again, I don't want to get too much into the mind of a dog, but whatever's happening, they bond, and then the protection sort of comes for free once they're bonded. I mean, people use livestock guardian dogs to protect penguins. It's really kind of incredible how good dogs are at bonding across species lines.
Wow, that's amazing. Danny Kink is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, a PhD student at Utah State University, has been working through the National Wildlife Research Center on a study of what different kinds of dog breeds can do in keeping wolves and even grizzly bears at bay from livestock herds in the West. You can join the conversation on the Exchange at 800-838-3760 by phone. Our email address is jx@jeffnet.org. So what are the breeds then? Three different breeds, is that it right?
Yeah, that's correct. So it's a Kongol dog, which is from Turkey, a Bulgarian Karakachan, and a Portuguese Cão de Gato Transmontano, or Transmontano for short.
All right. So, and any one of these, I mean, it looks like 120 dogs altogether. Was there a fairly even distribution of them?
Across the five-state region, yes. Within any particular state, it might, there might have favored one dog a little bit more just because of the way that producers trickled into the study, and we grew our numbers across the 4 years of the study. But across the five-state region, yeah, we tried to distribute them as evenly as possible.
So these particular breeds, other than their fact that their breed is used to doing the kind of work that you brought them here for, are they particularly larger or fiercer or something than the dogs that have already been in use in the West?
Well, the short answer is we didn't know. We set out to find out. They did tend to be a little bit bigger on average than the kind of guard dogs that are being used currently. We just called them white dogs in our study because it's actually a combination usually of multiple different breeds of guard dog that have been used here for the last, well, since the 80s. So compared to these white dogs, they tended to be a little bit bigger. Certainly the dogs that we brought in tended to have a little bit more coloration to their coats as opposed to just being pure white. Some of them had some coat variation. Beyond that, we knew that they were from a place where they were dealing with these large carnivores. We figured they'd be better at it for that reason. Whether that was behavioral or physical traits, we weren't sure, and that's what we set out to look for.
And then, so how did you measure success? I mean, once they got bonded with their herds, and I understand in a couple of cases they would rather hang around with the family than the herds, but those are by far the exception rather than the rule. Once they got up to speed, what did you do to measure their success?
Yeah, well, I mean, the first question on everybody's mind was, do they keep more sheep alive? So it was simply a matter of following the sheep band around with whatever combination of dogs, breeds that band happened to have, and saying, well, are sheep dying? And if so, what's killing them? So to say, are they dying from sickness? And if they're getting killed by a predator, was it a coyote or was it a bear or was it a cougar? So on and so forth. If it was a bear, was it a black bear or a brown bear, et cetera. And then after 4 years and a bunch of different dogs and states and producers, we were able to look at all that and those numbers, and we're still kind of refining this. But the quick answer is there's not a silver bullet dog. No one of these breeds stands out head and shoulders above the rest, which is not totally surprising. We kind of figured if there was a silver bullet dog out there, people would have caught wind of it before this study happened. But what we do find is that some of those breeds seem to show specific aptitude for dealing with certain predators better than their cousins, so to speak.
And did each breed handle, did one breed handle grizzlies a little better than the other and one handle wolves better than the other, or is it not that defined either?
Sure. Well, we had very few grizzly bear depredations throughout the study, so I couldn't really make any claims one way or the other about grizzly bears. There's just too few depredations to really know. When it comes to wolves, we didn't see any difference exactly between the breeds. There's some stuff that we're still trying to work out, particularly with the Congols. The thing with wolf depredation is it's not spread out evenly. So, you know, you'd have a specific producer in a specific place that might have quite a bit of conflict in one given year, but then, you know, nothing throughout the rest of the state or throughout the rest of time. So the wolf thing was tricky in the same way that the grizzlies were. We did find that the Congol breed, so the Turkish breed, and the Bulgarian Karakachan seemed to be quite a bit more successful at deterring coyote depredation. Now, even though there's the perception or these larger carnivores are on the rise and potentially doing more damage to livestock, still far and away the largest depredator of livestock is coyotes at this point. It's something in the neighborhood of like 70% across the entire country. So to show that these two breeds seem to have increased aptitude for dealing with this one specific carnivore, we think is probably pretty useful information for a lot of people.
That is a major point, though, to bring up. The coyotes are still responsible for a lot more damage to livestock than wolves, it sounds like.
That's correct. Far and away.
Do we have a multiple? I mean, is it a, you know, times five or something?
Have pulled up these numbers. I know off the top of my head that the coyotes represent about 70% of the depredations, again, across the United States, so that could vary a bit regionally, but I think it's fairly consistent.
Okay, 70%, that is a good number to work with, yeah.
And then wolves, I mean, that the rest of that 30% is everything from bears to vultures to ravens, I mean, a whole host of other predator species, wolves being pretty far down there at the bottom in terms of percentages.
Okay.
Even if you just look at the western states that have wolves, obviously, if you're counting Georgia, it's kind of dishonest.
All right, we won't count Georgia. We're talking to Danny Kinka at Utah State University, a PhD student who did a study with different kinds of dog breeds being used to keep wolves and even grizzlies away from livestock herds in the West. He's working on his PhD now. 800-838-3760 or jx@jeffnet.org. Here's John and Vanita. Welcome to The Exchange.
Hi, Jeffrey.
Hi.
It's a great, great show here. You got me going. Years ago, I got interested in Irish culture, started reading about it, and then I really got interested in the great honed Irish wolfhound.
Mm-hmm.
And without any doubt at all, I mean, I did a lot of research and talked to a lot of folks at dog shows and stuff, and being a nobody that knows much that really got interested, they are definitely far and away the king of dogs and canines. And then I heard stories from people, and like you're mentioning coyotes, you're talking about that. Very few people get into them. They're expensive, and they're kind of on the rare side. But they go out, once they get acclimated what they're doing, they go out, folks, be on horseback,
mm-hmm.
like places like Eastern Oregon, where it's wide open, and you see coyotes. You can actually take a what they call a gaze or a sighthound and grab their head and aim them like a heat-seeking missile, and they'll lock in on something that they know is what they should be going for. They would go for them, and they chase the coyotes, which can cut really quick, but eventually they're going to fail. And once they make one slip-up, they get scooped up, and they're dead before they hit the ground. And as far as the wolves, same thing. They would go out. They get used to hunt them, the great giant stag in Ireland,
mm-hmm.
With spears and packs of wolves. And the wolf they had back there before all that.
All right, so this is the Irish wolfhound we're talking about?
Yes, Irish wolfhound, just an incredible animal. I never slept better in my life than having a 7-foot-long giant that was afraid of absolutely nothing laying by my bed.
They are big dogs. Thanks for that, John. Appreciate that. Danny, with a name like wolfhound, it seems like this might have been a place you would have turned earlier, but not included in the study.
Sure, yeah, and I think it's a logical question. I was actually just asked this not that long ago about wolfhounds. Now, I should caveat this by saying I don't know a whole lot about wolfhounds, but my understanding is that they're bred kind of like what John was mentioning for, I mean, it's a hunting animal. It's used in conjunction with a hunter to go hunt actively a specific animal, whether it's a wolf or a coyote, what have you. It's a little bit different in what it's bred to do than a livestock guardian, which is left out with the sheep all night long, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, maybe not all year long, but certainly during the summer grazing months. And so it's a little bit of a different kind of active. The hunting dog is responding to, it's bonded to the hunter,
uh-huh.
I guess is the easiest way to put this, whereas a livestock guardian dog would be bonded to whatever it's protecting, sheep in most cases. And so they function a little bit differently. Now, there is some research out there about using mixed breed dogs or non-typical guardian breed dogs to guard sheep, and there's some limited evidence that, I mean, that can work. Again, most dogs are capable of bonding across species lines, but the difference is these guard dog breeds have been bred for thousands and thousands of years to be specifically trustworthy around sheep. I mean, not eating the sheep that they're intended to keep, not herding little lambs when they're trying to play with them, that kind of thing, mm-hmm. which other breeds, hunting breeds or any other breed, would not necessarily have been selectively bred to do.
So at the end of all the work then, and you mentioned you're kind of doing the edits on the PhD right now, does it appear that there's a strong enough case to be made to continue using the breeds that you brought in?
Yes. Again, we're working out a little bit of the details here still, but I think it's safe to say at this point that none of the breeds that we tested were significantly worse than the breeds that are currently being used now or the other breeds that we tested. I think the important thing that we found was, again, there wasn't a silver bullet dog, but specific breeds seem to have specific aptitudes for dealing with specific predators. They also seem to exhibit slightly different behavioral traits. Some of the dogs seem to be more willing to be kind of patrol type of dogs, where you might not see them right with the sheep all the time, but they're out there creating a perimeter and they're guarding. And other breeds might be more likely to stay kind of right in the middle of the herd and be more of a kind of a defensive player.
Well, fascinating stuff. So we're going to definitely hear more about Congals and Bulgarian Karakachans and Transmontanos. Danny Kinka did the work at Utah State University, and congratulations on your PhD looming. Thanks, Danny.
Thank you.